More of the Abe TL Show.
Your everyman's dream.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in, 92.9 The Game. The Abe TL Show continues. Hour number two of three. Just getting started. Here till 7 o'clock with you. We started at 4. A lot of college football down and a little bit of Falcons as well. We were talking about it. And the decision that Arthur Blank is going to be faced with. And I'll just go ahead and say it. I'm not hiding behind any shroud. I would move on from Raheem Morris. I said it very often a year ago. And while a little bit less so this year, I would still argue, I think he was a net negative on the team. I do. Now, I don't think it was all him. I felt a lot more of that last year. I thought last year was an absolute masterclass and a disaster of a coach. I definitely feel better about it this year. Does that mean he's improved and maybe year three would be even better? You want to make that argument? I understand. But this is the second year where I have felt, and again, I don't care about the what have you done for me lately. I am looking at the year. And I think a lot of people who have maybe changed their opinions or started to feel differently, way too much focus on a three-game win streak, not enough focus on weeks 7 through 14. And as much as I criticize Raheem Morris, it ain't all on him. And that's what makes the decision for Arthur Blank so difficult. You're already dealing with only giving a guy 2 years? That's what we're going to do? I understand that. Put one in the box to maybe keep him. Give him a third year. I understand that. But what really boils down to this being such a tough decision is the fact that it's not all on Raheem. It is not. I don't care what argument you want to make for or against Raheem Morris. It's not his fault entirely. And I'll tell you why. While I do think a fair bit falls on him, it also falls on Terry Fontenot. And it also falls on the players. And it's up to you to decide how to divvy up the blame. Because trust me. Well, I wouldn't say trust me. I would like to be able to say this confidently. But I just don't know Arthur Blank and where his mindset is at. If it were easy to just point the finger at Raheem Morris and say, this is your fault, I would have a lot more confidence that he would either already have been fired or will be fired come Sunday night, Monday morning. I do not believe, by any stretch, you can sit here and look at the Falcons season and point at Raheem Morris and say, this is all your fault. It's not. Terry Fontenot. I think this season got derailed partially because of roster construction. You were 0-5 in games without Divine Diablo. Maybe it's up to Raheem to do more with whoever is available. It's also up to Terry Fontenot to not be so thin at linebacker. And it's not his fault that Divine gets hurt or that Troy Anderson's not capable physically of filling in. It's not all his fault. You're also shallow at receiver. I don't know what went down with Ray-Ray McCloud, but he was gone. Darnell Mooney never got in gear, starting with his injury in training camp. And when Drake London went down, there was no answer. Now you're two positions, one on offense, one on defense, where you're too thin. And you couldn't win because of that. Is that a Raheem Morris issue? No. And again, I don't know all the discussions being had behind scenes of who puts together the roster, but the guy's got GM by his name. I'm blaming him. So that's not a Raheem issue. That's a Terry Fontenot issue. And you went into the year with Young Wei Koo as your kicker, you don't hold a kicking competition. And I don't want to hear anyone say Lenny Craig was in here for a kicking competition. No, he wasn't. He's here. He's still on the roster. He's doing his things. That's cool. He was never going to win the job. I don't know if Raheem Morris said, we have confidence, we're good to go with Koo. Or if Terry Fontenot says, last year was about injury, we're good with Koo. Someone needs to own up to it. Again, not to me, not publicly, but Arthur Blank needs the answer. Someone okayed hitting this year with Younghoe Koo as your kicker, and it cost you a game week one. Week one. And there were other kicking issues down the road. Now, it's nice that we have Zane Gonzalez, and it feels like he's capable of doing the job. A little too late. So I can blame Raheem Morris. I can blame Terry Fontenot. What about the players? Yeah, I think so. And as much good as there has been, I think you look at a couple red zone fumbles from Bijan Robinson, that's not a coaching issue. That's players. I think you look at the inconsistency of Kyle Pitts. Is that coaching? Maybe. The inconsistency of Michael Penix. Is that coaching? Maybe. It also might just be the players. And so I think from time to time, some of it falls on the players too. You want to blame the special teams coordinator. I get it. I'm mad about it too. And maybe it's not the truth. But when they sit here and tell you that a player gets pushed out of his lane and that opens a hole, is that coaching? Or is that a player? When on a field goal, two members of your offensive line just stand up and don't block anyone, and Jared Verse comes through, is that coaching? Or is that a player? And so, while I certainly wouldn't place a higher percentage of blame on the players, it's also not like they get zero blame for what the Falcons season has become, an utter disappointment, and quite frankly, a failure. And that's why the decision is difficult. That's why I don't know what the decision will be for Arthur Blank. I don't. I really don't. It's not all on Raheem, and it's not all on Terry Fontenot, but a good portion of it is. Is that enough for Arthur Blank to say, enough? We're going to try again with someone else. I don't know. I really don't. We got a couple calls, want to share their thoughts on the decision that Arthur Blank has facing him. Whether you win or lose tomorrow, I don't think it all rides on that. I think an ugly loss certainly would maybe stamp it if that's where the decision is headed. It's a difficult decision. I know a lot of people want to make it seem simple, and I get it. To start the segment, I said, I know what I would do. I would move on. That's just me. But I also admit it's not a simple decision. What do you guys think? We got Larry in Noonan. What's going on, Larry?
Hey, everybody. Enjoy the show. I disagree with you a little bit here. I do think it goes back to Raheem because he's the head coach. And that word head holds a lot of weight. I mean, he's in meetings with the general manager, Terry, all the time. He knows what he needs. He's on the field. He knows what he needs. He knows the players he needs. As far as fumbling it goes, yeah, you know, I mean, the players make mistakes, but Frazier had a problem fumbling too. Kirby Smart set his butt out, and he didn't have that problem anymore. You know, it goes back down to coaching. So, in my opinion, that word head holds a lot of weight. In my opinion, and my humble opinion, is Raheem's got to go. We need a, I think he's a good defensive coordinator, but we need a head coach in there. Someone that can take the bull's horn and make decisions. The kicking situation should have been settled a long time ago. The depth of the offensive line and everything, we shouldn't have had those problems. Again, it goes back to that word head. He's a head coach. I know the general manager and him sit down and talk. Ultimately, he's responsible for wins and losses on the field come Sunday. I appreciate it. I'll hear what you got to say.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Larry. Appreciate your time. And the only thing I would counter from that is I understand he's a head coach, and I understand he knows his team and the roster construction. But do you believe he has final say? Because I think there are some coaching situations where a GM says, I'm going to build you a team and you coach it. We've all seen draft day, right? Sonny Weaver built the team, and he asked, and I forget what the coach was who came from Dallas. It was Dennis Leary's actor, but I forgot his actual character name. He said, I'm going to build you a team, you coach it. And so I agree to an extent. The kicking situation had to be solved. The offensive line depth was a problem. The wide receiver depth was a problem. The linebacker depth is a problem. But I also don't know how it works between Raheem and Terry. And so I'm not going to pretend that Raheem made those calls. There's a good chance that Raheem went to Terry and said, we need a new kicker, not Koo. We need more receivers. We need more linemen. We need a lot of different things. And Terry said, probably more respectfully than this, no. We're going to stick with Koo. Or, no. You have Storm Norton and Elijah Wilkinson, and that's going to be enough. Now, again, Storm Norton got hurt, and things are outside of control of both of them. Injuries are outside of the control of both of them. Every team in the NFL is hurt, and so that can't be an excuse. And so I just, when we get to the roster management aspect of it, if that's your biggest complaint, I would actually lean towards that being a Terry Fontenot issue more than Raheem Morris. Yes, Raheem knows the roster and what he needs. So does Terry. And ultimately, I would view that as his call. Appreciate the call. We got James in Gainesville on the same discussion. What's going on, James?
Hey, how you doing? Enjoy your show. What I wanted to say was basically, you know, I think in regards to the Falcons, you got to get rid of Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot. And it's not about who you're going to fire or who you're not. If they're not doing their job and they got to go, you go down the line, you get rid of everybody you need to, you got to get rid of, and you start rebuilding. And like in regards to Raheem Morris, I mean, if you bring him back, there's going to be more of the same thing we've dealt with the last 2 years, like where he's not managing the time clock right. He's not managing timeouts right. And he's not really holding, in my opinion, the players accountable. And he's just letting like, the special teams disintegrate in front of him. I think like with Terry Fontenot, but Terry Fontenot has not done a good enough job like building the roster up to where we have like backup players and stuff like that. You know, sometimes in some positions we have one guy, if he gets hurt, the team's done, and you know, in that regard. And you know, I just I think, you know, that they gotta make changes if you wanna win. And one other thing I wanted to mention too was that I think Terry Fontenot needs to go in regards to Michael Penix picking him, because I don't understand how you pick somebody in the first round of a draft that doesn't like to play under center, and they got to establish an injury history, and then you think they're going to be the future of a team. And I don't really get why people think he's going to be a great quarterback, because I think he's one or two sock away from getting his knee knocked out again, and we aren't going to have a quarterback again. And I think it's a huge mess Terry Fontenot has put his hand. I mean, I know a lot of people don't agree with that, but I mean, I think you need to be looking at like, rather than worrying about whether or not you beat the Saints, you need to be looking at like Easton Stick tomorrow, you know, and maybe the guy from Florida, I think Tyler Trask, maybe. I think that's
Yeah, Kyle Trask. Guy. Yeah, he's, Kyle I think, Trask. On the practice squad. Yeah, I appreciate the call, James. We're running out of time here. Look, I think a lot of that is fair. And this goes back to why I would move on, despite potentially tomorrow ending this year 4-0, I don't have any belief that some of the issues that I have problems with from Raheem Morris as a head coach is going to be solved. I don't think he's necessarily gotten better or has put all those behind him. And the other thing is, I would buy that a little bit more if he was a first-time head coach, maybe. Not a first-time head coach. I would argue he wasn't really set up to succeed in Tampa his first time, but there are still things to learn from in that time there with the Bucs, and it feels like he didn't. And I just don't think that some of those issues are going to get solved despite potentially ending the year on a four-game winning streak. Appreciate the calls. Appreciate the conversation there on the Atlanta Falcons. It is a difficult decision. It is not easy. I will not pretend that it's an easy one for Arthur Blank. I know where I would go with it, but that doesn't make it easy for him. And so we'll see, depending on what happens tomorrow, on Sunday night, if Monday morning, if there's an announcement in regards to the Falcons, GM, head coach, or both. Week 18 of the NFL is underway. We'll get you an update on the Panthers and Bucks, where that one stands. And we'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in Week 18, some of the bigger games, some of the more meaningful matchups. It's all coming your way next. It's the Abe TL Show. I'm Abe Gordon, live on the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
Hello there.
More of the Abe TL Show.
Your everyman's dream
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon hanging with you till 7 o'clock tonight. So we're just about halfway home. Started at 4, on to 7. Not going to lie, and I talked about it a little bit at the start. I did run the polar opposite 10K this morning here in Atlanta. The reverse Peachtree, if you want to use the street name, you know. Proper name, polar opposite, that's the race's government name. But reverse Peachtree, you know what I mean? And I went after it pretty good. I went as close to as hard as I'm going to go. And I was pretty out of it later in the day. Before I came here, I was pretty winded. Not winded, but like wiped, you know. I took a nap, that helped, but had to get the energy up, and I think we've gotten there. I really enjoyed that Falcons discussion we've had the past two segments. And I wish it was such an easy discussion. And I don't mean like the fire a guy is always a tough discussion to have. It's not. And I've mentioned this before. I like Raheem Morris a lot. And I wish it was working out better than it is. Even though he did low-key call me fat last time I interviewed him. I think he...
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
Stop.
The last time I interviewed... And by the way, this is mostly a joke. He did say it, but it was in good spirits.
It's never in good spirits when somebody...
No. It was fine. It was not a big deal. It was fine. It was funny. But the last time I actually interviewed him was Wednesday last year before Thanksgiving. And I don't mean last year as in like 2025 Thanksgiving. Now it's 2026. I mean, the last Thanksgiving, two Thanksgivings ago, technically.
2024.
And it was the Wednesday. I was up there with Carl. They're doing the normal Dukes and Bell, and Mike had the day off. He's probably on vacation for Thanksgiving, as he deserves it. And something came up, and I said, I got the half marathon tomorrow. And he looked at me, and he said, "You? Half marathon? You?" I'm like, "Coach, come on, man."
Oh, so he was trying to insinuate that you couldn't,
run.
Couldn't do that? Oh,
because okay. I was fat.
What a jerk.
No.
No, he's not a jerk.
I also was like, "Hey, you might think so," and this is probably, I didn't actually say this, but I was like, "If you want me to pace you for your first half marathon, you let me know."
I'd be like, "Win a playoff game? You?"
No, God, come
you?
On. No, we're not saying that.
No, okay.
But I do like Raheem Morris. He also trashed me for having cruise line status on Carnival. That was its own discussion. So I've had some good, again, these are all positive, fun, joking discussions. I really do like Raheem Morris. And
that's the thing. I think everybody likes Raheem Morris.
A lot of people want him to succeed. But it can't,
not,
that
the
can't
page
be,
has not turned.
That can't be why you do or don't fire him. In any line of work, by the way. This is not a football decision. In any line of work, you can't just keep people on because you like them. I mean, maybe you're so, you got so much money and it's not impacting your bottom dollar from a business perspective, but this is not that. This is a team trying to win. And I only said that because, like, the idea of to fire a coach sometimes is an easy discussion. I'm not saying that it's a tough discussion because it's always tough to talk about someone losing their job. No, it's not, man. Sometimes people need to lose their jobs. And sometimes it's obvious. It may not happen. Aaron Glenn with the Jets, the guy that needs to lose his job. Mike McDaniel, a little more complicated, but that, again, we talked about it. You want to credit Raheem, the team didn't quit on him, fine. That Miami team is all out on Mike McDaniel. That's a guy that needs to lose his job right now. Doesn't mean he's a bad head coach. The same way that doesn't always mean Raheem Morris is a bad head coach. It's not that it's a difficult discussion because it's always difficult to fire someone. No. It's a difficult discussion because it's cloudy. It's a difficult discussion because it's muddy. You're dealing with a 2-year timeline, not multiple seasons like McDaniel's had. And as I detailed last segment, it's not all on Raheem. As much as some of you want it to be, it's simply not. And so we'll see where that goes. But that, I wasn't like sluggish, but like that discussion, detailing how I felt about the Falcons and the decision to be made, kind of woke me up. Someone else has been woken up is the Carolina Panthers. On offense, at least. They were what looked to be headed towards a 14-0 deficit. They're able to get a stop on Tampa. They go down 7-0. They get a touchdown after it looked like Baker Mayfield had thrown a pick in the red zone. It looks like they were really in trouble, potentially going down 13 or 17-0. But they get the interception. I think it was Tommy Tremble goes the other way on Bryce Young's pass for a short touchdown. And now they've gotten another stop. And so you are towards the later stages of the second quarter, and the Buccaneers are holding on to a 10-7 lead. It is wet there in Tampa. And so, honestly, every time someone's carrying the ball into contact, I'm like, hey, it could fumble. And we've already seen a couple fumbles, and they've been recovered by the team. Even just now, fielding that punt, I was like, a little dicey out there. Big time rain. And so we'll see how it goes. But again, battle for the NFC South. If Carolina wins today, they win the NFC South. If Tampa wins today, it comes down to Atlanta to decide the fate of both Tampa and Carolina. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. Week 18, a lot of significant games going on right now. Or not going on right now, but going on throughout the course of this week. And real quick, tonight, again, I got Josh Hagedone here with me hanging out for a little bit longer. I know Dom is on his way in to replace Josh for the final hour of the show. But we'll chat a little college, a little pro football here with Hagedone. Tonight's game, Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. Winner of this game is the number one seed in the NFC. And quite frankly, the way it's played out for either team, I am shocked that these are the two teams vying for that slot. In regards to the Seahawks, I didn't know to what extent Sam Darnold would follow up his campaign from last year in Minnesota this year. I think Mike McDonald is an outstanding head coach, and I think you're seeing that now. I don't know if there's a better head coach in all of the NFL than Kyle Shanahan. And to have the injuries defensively that they have had, to have to deal with whatever's going on with Brandon Ayuk, and at no point this year having your number one offensive weapon, well, make your arguments. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is there, so maybe that's your number one offensive weapon. But on the outside, never having Brandon Ayuk, and an aging George Kittle who's just, it's fair to say, him and Kelsey, of their era, they were the best. It is no longer their era.
Kittle's been banged up all season.
It is no longer their era.
Yeah.
They are past their prime. Still very good. Do not get me wrong. It is, they are on the downsides of their career, and that's okay. It happens. But let's stop pretending like Kittle's taken over games the way he has in years past. Kyle Shanahan won a number of games with Mac Jones having to fill in, and Mac Jones looked very good. He's going to get a contract in the offseason because of it.
Yeah, Mac Jones definitely elevated his status with the way he played this season.
Turning Brock Purdy, who, again, we all know the story, Mr. Irrelevant, all that, signed a huge contract. People still ask questions, whatever. For the Niners to be where they are, potentially winning the number one seed, is an outstanding coach job. In my opinion, the best in the NFL. How do you see this one playing out tonight? It's a home game for the Niners.
Well, for me, it being a home game for the Niners, and given, and especially how well Seattle has played this season, Abe, because like you spoke to Sam Darnold, was he going to translate the success he had in Minnesota last season to the success in Seattle, which he has done.
Yes.
But for me, I just think, like you said, Kyle Shanahan, regardless, and for me, I think everybody kind of reverts back to his time here in Atlanta and the unfortunate situation that happened with the Super Bowl, yada, yada. But I just think, yeah, Kyle Shanahan's one of the best coaches in the NFL. His offensive prowess is incredible. I think his game planning is incredible. And just what he's been able to do. I mean, you lose Fred Warner. I think the thing is that
– Michael Williams went down. McCaffrey Bosa went down. Their whole defensive line has been shredded.
Somewhat all season. So I think that has been kind of
– Definitely.
It's
just been a saving grace for them offensively. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been the pillar for them. And you know, the wideouts with Jennings and, like you said, Ayuk,
Pearsall's been
banged up all season. But just the way that they just keep winning games. And I think a lot of it has to do with the offensive line. Even though Trent Williams has been in and out all season, their offensive line has played well. Christian McCaffrey has been healthy. So I just feel like San Francisco, they're going to close this one out, and they're going to take the win. They'll get the number one seed.
Appreciate your statement, Counselor. Overruled. I think Seattle is the best team in the NFC. And I think they go on the road and showcase that today. And there's been a number of times where Sam Darnold's been questioned in big games, in big moments. Remember earlier this year, he started out a game with two interceptions. Everyone was like, oh, Sam Darnold. He came back with touchdowns right after that and brought that team back. I think their defense under McDonald is playing at such a high level. I think they're going to go on the road and win today and stamp themselves as the team to beat in the NFC.
But could be wrong.
I would not be surprised.
But the thing to me is both of these teams, like, they have won so many close games.
Yeah.
So it's really going to be a tight – I think it's going to be a toss-up because neither one has really kind of showed a dominance
The real shame is that if the Niners were healthy, I think they're the best team in the NFL.
Yes.
If they have Bosa and Michael Williams and some of the other – Fred Warner and some of the guys in the secondary – like, if the Niners were healthy, I think they're the best team in the NFL. But they're just not healthy. They're not going to be healthy in the playoffs. These guys had season-ending injuries. Although, there's a chance Fred Warner comes back. I don't know if that's smart, but they're saying that's possible.
Yeah, I saw he's pushing for a comeback.
The Niners will be the best team in the NFL if they're healthy. I really do feel that. They're close, as banged up as they are. If they had those studs, they'd be the best team in the NFL. The biggest weakness for them is they're having real trouble creating pressure on the opposing quarterback. We'll see how big that parlays into Sam Darnold tonight. That game's at 8 o'clock. Looking forward to it. Just scrolling down a couple of other games, kind of what matters. Really nothing at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Nothing overly relevant. Your Lions, what's their setup? They play the Bears on the road tomorrow.
Bears and
are y'all in the playoffs? Have you clinched?
No.
Can you clinch?
Stop it. No, we're done.
You're eliminated.
We are eliminated.
Boy, that's bad.
We have
you
missed,
guys entered the year as one of the favorites.
We did, and just off. My whole thing was apparently Ben Johnson. Well, not apparently Ben Johnson was the difference because you see what Aaron Glenn has done in New York. You see what Ben Johnson has done in Chicago.
Yeah,
Ben Johnson was the difference.
Fair enough. The Broncos. They host the Chargers, who are not playing Justin Herbert tomorrow. They're both in the playoffs. Broncos with a win, AFC's number one seed. Then Ravens and Steelers. Tomorrow night, we all know the deal. Winner takes the 4 seed in the AFC and the AFC North crown. Loser is done and maybe, just maybe, moving on from a head coach. I don't believe it, but there's talks. So that's what's going on in Week 18. We'll talk about that more in our final segment of the show. I had to kind of speed run it there. We got to switch to the Georgia Bulldogs and their playoff exit. And as much as I try my best to keep things in perspective, I am biased. I buy into hype of my teams. And so I'm not going to criticize when fans of Georgia or any other school program do that. But I'm going to lay out what is realistic in college football and see if that changes anyone's mind about what happened to the Georgia Bulldogs this season. We'll talk about it on the other side. It's Abe Gordon, the Abe TL Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Hello there.
More of the Abe TL Show.
Your everyman's dream
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Abe TL Show here. Abe Gordon. Had some interesting conversations about the Falcons earlier. We're going to have one about Georgia. And if you want to continue some of these conversations, do so on Twitter/X at Abe Gordon. That's where you can find me. I respond to some, not all, of the messages, but you know, I get back to people when I can. And I know Caleb Johnson, our buddy who was hosting before me, talked about some news in the NBA. And a new ban of, you know, headband awareness, literally awareness, like where you're wearing the headband. Thought that was a good one. But he kind of joked, oh, I know the NFL's the no fun league, but the NBA getting in on the action. Well, the NFL, back on top, baby. The NFL has announced that they are fining Rams linebacker Jared Verse $11,000 for flashing a peace sign at the Falcons bench during that blocked field goal return touchdown. I don't know, man. Like, do we really care that much? And I understand the fines go to a good purpose to support former players and all, like, whatever. I like taunting. Like it's not that up in your face disrespectful to where like it's going to start a fight or anything.
Like I get the whole
not a big deal, man.
I get the whole slash gesture and you not want people to do
this
that.
This was a peace sign.
But the peace sign?
Come on,
man. I mean, but hasn't like Tyreek been fined for it because he'd be, you know, he's running for a touchdown and he just throws
and
up.
And it's
the peace
one thing
sign
to do it like in a guy's face 2 yards behind you, like, "Hey, I've beat you on this route." In your face, dude. I like, even that's kind of...
So what's next? You can't wave bye-bye? Like, if you...
No,
are,
I don't think you can wave bye-bye.
You can't wave bye-bye?
No, I don't think you can. If you can't flash peace, a peace sign is literally a goodbye, right?
It's the most...
Is that any different than the wave?
It's the most docile goodbye that you can
get. It's just not a big deal. I don't understand why... Let guys have fun. Let people show their personality.
And if you can't take it, then you maybe you don't need to be on the sidelines of an NFL roster because
block the guy coming through the line. Yeah. You don't want him to block the field goal
this
and return
is the
it. Block the guy.
Ultimate level of competitiveness. And if you cannot take guys at the height of the competitive level showing emotion and showing, you know, passion, I don't know what else.
I don't either. Let guys have fun, but whatever. That news came down just a couple of minutes ago. So Jared Verse fined $11,000 for his actions.
$11,000? Man.
I mean, whatever. Whatever. Anyways, Georgia football. And I don't really even know what to think about what we saw in that loss to Ole Miss. I know what I want to say in general, and I'll get to the general discussion of college football teams and how easy it is to win a title in a moment. And I ended last segment talking about bias and being overly optimistic and hype and all that expectation and stuff like that. And I don't want to, I don't really even know how to say this, because it's not that I was wrong. I think I got fooled, and I think so did everyone else. The Georgia Bulldogs this year, it became quite apparent a couple of weeks into the season, were not good enough to win a national championship. Early in the year, I watched the Georgia Bulldogs play, and I thought to myself, it's a good team, but I don't see them winning a championship. I don't think the secondary was as good as I thought they would be early on in the year. I thought there were some issues along the offensive line, and they were dealing with injuries at the time. I grant you that. They hadn't really gotten the run game going, and they were getting zero pressure on the quarterback. And that carried all the way till the fourth quarter of the game against Ole Miss, and things seemed to flip. And their defense got some stops, and from there on, they were off and rolling. They ran the ball, they started getting pressure, and they started to look a little bit more like a team capable of winning it all. They were trending upwards. They beat Texas. They go to the SEC title game. They absolutely manhandle and throttle Alabama, who, now that we've seen Indiana do it, a lot of people are going back to that game and saying it maybe wasn't as impressive as we once thought. I got fooled by Georgia into changing my mind about them, because my instinct was what I saw early on, a team not good enough to win a championship. And what I saw later in the year was maybe my first thoughts were wrong. No, changing my first thoughts were wrong. I was right. You see how I did that? I actually wasn't wrong. I was right the whole time. And again, it wasn't that they're not capable of winning a championship, but they're not going to. They didn't. They lost. And they lost because of the number of reasons that I was hesitant to believe they were good enough the first half of the season. Too many big plays allowed by the secondary. Couldn't get the quarterback to the ground. Stuff like that. And I know Chris Thomas Turtle was on the air on Friday and asked the question if it's a failed season for Georgia. I don't love that question, but I understand it. And I don't think he's the only one asking it. I think you do have to look, the same way we're looking at the Falcons, based on whatever happens tomorrow, how bad of a season was it, and did you meet expectations and hype and all that stuff? Is it a failed year? I don't love the question, but I understand it. And I think you kind of got to reset the expectations in this newish era of college football. And I know we said this probably like 5 years ago, and I'm saying it again now, because I think that's how short some of these eras have been. They're having the conversation in Tuscaloosa. They're having the conversation in Columbus. And they're having the conversation in Athens. And I think the conversation that needs to be had by Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia and any other power contender, Clemson, whatever team you think should be competing for championships, what's a realistic expectation? I know we want to sit here and say year by year, Georgia's going to come in with the best team in the country, and anything less than winning it all is a disgrace. That's not real. It's not real when Ohio State says it. It's not real when Alabama says it. It's not real when Clemson says it. It's not real when Georgia says it. And it's not real when any team you want to name says it. Year by year, coming in thinking you're the best team and just title or bust, that's not real. I don't even know if what I'm about to say is real. but I'm going to say it. I think the question you have to ask for all of these legitimate power contenders, twofold. How many titles should you win and how often? And what's the goal on an annual basis? Because you can't just have, we win a national championship, anything less is failure. That's not real. How many titles should you win and how often? Boy, honestly, I think like one championship every 5 to 6 years is way outperforming. Like I think if you can win one championship, like two championships a decade, like that's probably what's real. For being honest. In this era, that's probably what's real. So what should you be looking at on a year-by-year basis? Three things. With the fourth ultimately being a national championship, obviously. Conference title game and win it. Georgia did that. Ohio State got there but didn't do it. Second goal, playoffs. Georgia did that. Third goal, win a playoff game. Now, Ohio State did. Ohio State didn't. They didn't either. But Georgia didn't either. And the fourth goal would be to win the national championship. But I think you look at it and you say the goal for this year starts with the conference championship berth, win the conference championship, get into the playoffs. If you're doing that on a year-by-year basis, you're giving yourself a chance to win it all. I don't think winning it all is your bottom line every year expectation. Giving yourself a chance to win it all, I'm okay with that. If you want to sit here as a Buckeye fan, as a Georgia fan, Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama, whatever power program you want it to be, and say, we belong in the playoffs every year. I don't mean you're gifted a berth. I mean, you should be good enough to make the playoffs every year. I'm okay with that being the level. But winning a championship and everything else below that is a failure? That's not real. Why is it so tough? How has the playoff format changed? All of it. How's NIL changed all of it? It's just not as easy to win one anymore. You have to play at that level for 3 or 4 games, if you keep winning, against other good teams. It's not bring your best effort one game after a month off. I don't know if anyone would beat Georgia if they just always had a month off to prepare for one game. The other difference is the gap between good, great, and elite is much smaller. And on a given day, a great team can beat an elite team. A good team can beat a great team. I honestly think game day coaching might matter more now than ever. The margins are smaller, and you have to reproduce the effort. It's simply tougher than it used to be. And so expecting a title every single year is not realistic. There's a reason we haven't had a three-peat since Minnesota. What was that, in the 30s? And only a couple of back-to-backs, including Georgia a couple years ago. I get the frustration in the moment. This Georgia team was never good enough to win a championship. They pulled the wool over me. Maybe you feel differently. I don't. I was right the first half of the year when I saw issues and didn't buy it. And they tricked me. I don't think it's a failed season, though. But you still got to respond next year. We'll see how they do that. All right, hour number two down here on the Abe TL. When we come back, we're going outside the perimeter. Some of the top national sports stories, headlines, and topics, plus an update on the NFC South battle between the Panthers and Bucks. It's all coming your way next. It's the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon hanging out with you till 7 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.